Hey, Heather here. Designed to empower individuals to be their best self, the Ron Kitchens Always Forward Leadership Podcast brings fresh understanding to the issues today's leaders are facing and equips them with new perspectives and resources to lead forward. Welcome to today's conversation with Ron Kitchens and Brad Lominick.
Hey, I'm so excited to have Tim Scott with us today. Tim's one of the co-founders of Mitt Scoots Outfitters, which, as everybody who listens to this podcast knows, I love companies with a heart. I love organizations. As I sit here, you know, wearing my Tom's shoes and my Warby Parker glasses with, you know, my giving key on my keychain, it reminds me how glad I am to be in business and social enterprises at this point in my life, because there's so many amazing leaders doing incredible things. And one of those is Tim Scott. So Tim, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. And to hear the list of other give back brands that you rattled off, I'm like, yes, that is an awesome group to be a part of.
Yeah, we love this idea that, you know, business was always created to serve more than the shareholders. But a lot of people, I think, forgot that. And it was pre-internet, it was hard for us to operate in those models because we just couldn't scale. But, you know, I'm doing all the talking, and this is really about you. So tell us what Mitt Scoots does. First, where'd the name come from? I'm pronouncing it correctly, right?
Yeah, you are. It's Mitt Scoots Outfitters, and the name actually is a version of my name. First name is Tim, and last name is Scott. And I guess when I was a little kid, I don't know if I got kicked in the head by a horse or dyslexia, just couldn't figure it out. But instead of Tim, it came out Mitt. And instead of Scott, it came out Scoot. And the teachers didn't correct me. They let me spell it wrong for like 2 weeks. and then this substitute came in and she was like, no, that's all kinds of wrong, and proved it to me on front of the board. And we all had a good laugh. And then I got stuck with this like nickname that I couldn't live down. And it followed me through like the military and college. It was on the back of my letter jacket. And when it came time to name the company, I thought, well, I'm going to make this mean something good, because secretly, you know, I hated it. And it was kind of my way to try and take this contextually bad thing that had been following me around a lot and turn it into something good. Hopefully in the same vein as a lot of the individuals that we employ that have this stereotype of homelessness, we're trying to kind of turn that on its head and show that someone that perseveres through that can actually be a really strong, valuable employee when they rejoin that workforce.
So let's go deep on that. So I know you all not only are employing the homeless, but you're also a give back company. And we do work with leaders that are both working on the homeless and give back. So Giving Keys is one of those that, you know, we love Caitlin and support her work. And she's a great friend to us at Caitlin Crosby at Giving Keys.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about why that is such a role on your heart. And then tell us about the product lines that you all are providing. And I know I have a Mitt Scoots Texas bandana that was a gift, but you will do far more than that. So tell us, one, about your heart, and two, about the products.
Sure. My wife and I, who's the other co-founder, we started it based on the volunteering that we were doing. We were going out with a lot of great organizations that had feet to the street and were helping homelessness, both through donated items and then also through some support programs. But when we would go out and donate a lot of this stuff, we kept running into really similar requests and ones that we kind of thought were a shock to us. Things like socks, gloves, beanies, scarves, these really basic accessory items that often don't get donated. And when they do, they're in rough shape and they don't really last long out on the streets. And we had thought, well, this is kind of a silly problem when you're dealing with the other grave issues and contextual problems of homelessness. This shouldn't really be something you have to worry about. And so we thought, well, we'll contact a company. I'm sure there's one out there like Tom's. It does like a one-for-one model. We'll ask them for stuff. They'll give it to us. Boom. We'll be good, right? And it turned out that that didn't exist. And so this was essentially our next step to solve the problem. And through that, we've been able to grow enough to actually hire individuals in need so that hopefully we don't have to perpetually just have this donation cycle. So for us, when we go out to the streets and we would ask, what do you need? What do you need? Those are the questions that we use to help define our product line. So ultimately, it's to be able to outfit someone from head to toe. We do that by selling an equal quality item. So whenever we sell a pair of socks or a hat or a beanie or a glove, scarf, backpack, shirts, we give an equal quality item to somebody in need. And then at our packing facility in Austin, we hire individuals transitioning out of homelessness to put that all together and get it sent out to our online customers and retail partners all over the country.
I think that's an incredible story. You know, I think one of the things that struck me there was equal quality. And you said it two or three times. Tell me why that's so important.
There's a lot of good that's happening out in the world with companies that are giving back. But I do think that there's quite a bit of grayness as to what is defined for giving back. You know, we didn't want to be this like, we donate 5% to whatever.
It's not a gimmick for you.
It's not a marketing effort. It's a core value of our company. And we wanted to make sure that people knew that we only exist because we're trying to help people. Now, we can do that by making a really damn nice thing. But the goal is to help people. That's what we measure our success by. The better thing we make, the more good we can go do. So it really doesn't have to be the divergent business strategies. You know, if I make a really great thing, I can do great things with it. And there's also been some other nuances to it where in by making a thing that is designed for individuals that have to live out in an extreme environment perpetually, we end up having this amazing R&D that we can apply to the rest of our products as well. So when we say equal quality, you know, we're not out always giving, you know, a pair of Argyle socks or a fancy trucker hat to individuals in need. What we did is tried to design and create what's the best pair of socks that you could give away and what's the nicest hat that you could give away. That ended up being like some moisture wicking bright white hiking socks that we give. And then it also was a nice moisture wicking 3M insulated hat that we're able to then give away, because it's much more about their needs than just doubling up a thing that we already make and saying like, well, here you go. It's not supposed to be an afterthought. It's supposed to be a core, you know, directional value for our company.
Wow, I love that. Core directional value. You know, in today's world, I think that's a lot of the authenticity we're all hungry for. We want that. We want to know what companies stand for, and they're delivering on that promise. It isn't, you know, I have these really cool new, I think they're cool new, Warby Parker glasses.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if they gave somebody who needed glasses, they're giving some 10-year-old kid. These are pretty dorky 50-year-old glasses for a kid, but they're giving him glasses and eye care that matches their needs, not what they just want to get rid of.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you're saying the same thing with that.
Well, if we decide to get into a product because it happens to be popular at that moment, you know, whatever color, whatever design, and we find out that, oh, this didn't sell that well, it's not our opportunity to then just go give that stuff away. That's not how it's supposed to work. That's literally an afterthought. So instead, it's our job as a business to, you know, motivate people to want that stuff. And maybe even more so as a business, not to get into things that are going to be these, you know, high risk product endeavors. And it still makes sure we keep on track with why we exist, which is to help employ individuals in need and make them the things that they need. And by doing that, it's kind of ended up being able to work itself out that you make a better thing. It's longer lasting. It speaks to a larger audience. And there's just that much more joy and happiness that goes behind it. So
I'm very impressed that you have that clarity, because it's something that all of us, I think, are looking for. But how do you protect that? How do you, as a leader, ensure that you're making decisions that protect your culture against daily marketplace grinds?
Well, so my background before this was actually in advertising. I was an art director working with some agencies on larger clients, and I saw that exact problem constantly, which was, well, this is hot right now, or hey, this seems neat. We could piggyback on this idea. And it really compromised a lot of these core values that companies had really spent a lot of time trying to develop, who they are and what they are. And instead, they were just kind of grasping at straws to become relevant and popular for a brief moment. And I thought, that is just the worst way to do it. It's so transparent. Why not just double down on the core values that you want to create and really spend all your time making something that's worth liking instead of trying to convince people that they should like it. And so for us, that waypoint is it helping them or is it helping us? And there is no really us or them, but individuals transitioning out of homelessness. So with nearly every decision that we make, is it going to help them eventually? Or is it this short-term gain where we get, you know, an interesting little bump in web traffic because of something trending on Twitter? Case in point is getting to talk to you. This is something that we get to talk about, you know, why we exist in an authentic and true way versus trying to grab a hashtag that happened to be trending, you know? And we feel that that ultimately is going to strengthen our company and give us the ability to employ more individuals and donate to individuals' need in a more efficient, authentic, and true way as much as possible. So that's just the test. Every time we think like, well, should we make this? Do they need that? Is that something that we could give to someone in need because they've requested it? Or is it just because, you know, that particular product is super hot right now online?
I think we can all learn from that. That really is gold. So you're clearly a marketplace guy. You clearly understand the market, selling things, the ad business. So
hopefully.
Yeah, well, but I think there's this sense in our, you know, and I don't want to pin it all on the millennials. I'm a Gen X guy. But if we look at this, there's this idea that we want to do well while we're doing good. And you get pushback from family members, from friends who said, you know, what are you doing? Just go sell more of these things. Don't worry about that. You know, when you get to the end of your life, you write a big check to a charity and that ought to be your goal. Or are you seeing that this is a new sustainable business model?
I think that it is a sustainable business model, but to speak more to like your earlier point, when I'm thinking about us as co-founders, career path, our company, I don't feel like it's this race to money in this big Scrooge McDuckian vault at the end. And then you look back and go, oh, I really should make up for some of the questionable choices that I made. That's, I just think, so backwards. I've been able to talk to some people that had lived that life and they chased that particular ideal of what good looked like in their life and have had immense amount of regret that they had to compromise point after point, eventually got to what is a pretty house and nice, you know, affluent lifestyle, but didn't really like who they were or having to find these new ways to recoup that lost time. And it is a little bit more untested. It is a little bit tougher and you have to make the right decisions versus the quick decisions. But by doing so, I think that we're becoming a more honest and integrity-based company than chasing after easy means for what will then be a later in life give back scenario. I don't want to have to give back later in life. I want to be able to give back right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that truly is what successful capitalism is going to look like. Plus, anybody who can figure out how to use the term Scrooge McDuckian in a, you know, sense is my guy. And so how do you ensure that new employees in the organization are all in on the culture? I think that's something that all of us who are growing and increasing in our business struggle with, that how do you make sure the new kids understand what the old kids are all about?
Well, I actually kind of use a little bit of what is a super old school methodology and apply it towards any of the incoming employees because I think it actually is lacking in some of the newer, I guess, age individuals that are coming through. So I used to be in the military. I was in the Air Force. And the three core values that we had were integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. And what I found is that those three are amazingly applicable to business decisions as well, is that if we go integrity first, that means we're open, we're honest, we're trying to do something new and help people, and we can't do it with doors closed and secrets going on to figure out how we could get away with it and count another dollar or something like that. Everybody sees that and they respect it. And we teach that to a lot of individuals, and it's not something, in my opinion, that is being pushed very much because there is a much more showy social media, I'm the coolest person ever kind of identity that's instead being pushed. And I think it's refreshing for a lot of younger individuals to see that you can instead be honest and open and have integrity and actually be rewarded for that. Then the service before self, in a lot of ways, you know, speaks for itself. We really do want to try and help others. By doing that, it comes full circle and we'll be able to be a better, stronger company. That's also something that I feel like a lot of younger people don't necessarily get a chance to do, is by actively getting involved and give service versus just celebrating themselves. And then finally, the excellence in all we do. Really taking pride in the stuff that you make, whether that's an email that you're writing for a pitch or a quick little design thing, one pixel to the left, one pixel to the right, whatever it is that we have our people do, we want them to take great pride in that. You know, be a professional, whatever it is, taking out the trash. You take out the trash as best as anyone's ever taken out the trash. And there's a lot of pride and integrity that comes out of that, even from those minor tasks. And so we're just trying to really empower people through the lesser things as much as the huge decisions that need to be made.
That's impactful. My brother's also a former member of the Air Force and retired from that. And he lives by those same three tenets. So it was incredible to hear you put those in place. But I know you all are working on some of the same issues we are as we continue to grow our businesses and our enterprises. And that's this idea around, as we grow, how do we keep from becoming an institution and we lose our inspiration? And it's something that we work really hard on every day. But as we've gone from 10 people to 20 to 40, that has really been tough for us. Have you all had to deal with that, this idea of institution versus inspiration? And how do you keep going?
Well, we're still a grassroots team, so we're struggling with that, I'll be honest, day in and day out, because that is really, I don't want to say it's just a bad thing or a struggle. It's an opportunity, because I think if you've decided what the larger version of your organization is going to be, then you're going to spend a ton of your time fighting tooth and nail to make it that, versus being a little bit more flexible. Know what your core is. Know what the value structure is for everything that you do and what you're about. And then finding ways to take that individuality of the different age groups that come in, or the different employment structures, the different numbers of people that add character and add a little bit more humanity to the organization itself. We're not trying to make this like monolithic structure and say that is what good is. We're still kind of in the process of figuring out what great can be instead of just what good is. And I think that comes a lot from respecting the nuance of each different age dynamic that comes through. And it is varied. You know, when we're working with transitioning individuals coming out of homelessness, that can top 70 plus years old. And then we can have interns that are, you know, 18, 19, and they're literally in the exact same room on occasion, maybe working on a project together. And so that can be a really unique experience, but also rewarding and beneficial for the company to say, I didn't realize that these two people would have that in common. Maybe that's something that we could apply towards the other mechanisms that we use. So I think deciding what good is before it actually has become that large is faulty for some companies and organizations. And instead, we want to try and build into what we can be versus decide what we should be.
Well, that's gold right there, of knowing in advance how you're going to make decisions and what's important before you're facing them makes it really easy to make those decisions. I have a author, minister I follow, Craig Rochelle, and Craig teaches on that a lot, of knowing what those things are in your life that are going to be a temptation, and knowing that when you walk in and fresh baked cookies, you're smelling them, you're not eating them if you're on a diet.
Yeah.
And how you're going to, you know, eat the celery, which I never seem to be able to do. But so, you know, Craig's one of those people I learn from. Who else are you learning from in your leadership, kind of outside of your direct business and those that you're best practicing from?
Well, you know, everybody always leans on things like TED Talks and stuff like that. Malcolm Gladwell always has some fantastic things to learn from.
New podcasts are amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are truly brilliant, brilliant people. And so there are a number of those things that I listen to, that, you know, to and from work. And I make sure that I'm trying to learn the lessons from the smartest people in the room. But one of the other things that I've tried to leverage on in the last couple of years is making sure that I don't pigeonhole myself into only getting advice from those sources that have been given authority as advice resources. So truly, even speaking to individuals that we employ that are coming out of very unique and difficult situation, that is a wealth of perspective that, you know, it's not always an immediate quotable, but if you take the time to dig deep a little bit, it really can help guide a lot of things that we're deciding. So I know that's not something that could easily be applied to another, you know, leader or another CEO of a company, but from a generic kind of tip, I would say, don't look only for people that say they're advice givers to get advice from.
No, I think you're dead on. It's really about learning. Yeah, you don't need authority to be a leader or to have insight. You just need somebody to listen to that. And, you know, I learn a lot from the young millennials on our team, not just about culture, but about authenticity and staying relevant. I mean, they're really hungry for that relevancy piece. But if I just went to my peers in leadership or those people that I have always followed, you know, it's that whole thing, if you always do what you've always done, you're going to get what you always got. And that applies to leadership as well. You know, it's just more interesting to find interesting people to learn from.
I've seen this like question come up a lot, but it's always one of those things that people want to know, like, hey, what wells are you drinking from? Where are you finding your great inspiration and resources? And I think that's a good question. I think that there are a lot, but I also hear a lot of similar answers sometimes get rattled off where they're like, oh, you got to watch Malcolm Gladwell's TED Talk about, you know, spaghetti sauce. And then you got to watch this, read that, look at that, do that. And I hear a lot of the same tripes over and over. And I kind of start to wonder, like, are we all going to end up being the same type of leader?
Yep.
They're trying to leverage the same information that we're all finding versus trying to understand the audience that we want to lead, you know, because each leader is going to have to be slightly different, especially if each organization and company is trying to be slightly different. So trying to put this like box around what a leader is supposed to look like based on all of these different resources, to me, is slightly misguided. It's taken it straight only from the top instead of really trying to understand and learn, who are you trying to lead? What do they need? What really speaks to them? And I can't do that without talking to, you know, all levels of our organization.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead on. We've got a good friend who's been on this podcast, Willie Baronet, who also is in the ad agency world, and he teaches, he's now a professor at SMU in their advertising department, but Willie has developed a large public art exhibit and a film around the idea that we're all homeless. And, you know, Willie's a friend. We've spent a lot of time together, but it wasn't until I went with him. And his thing is he goes and buys homeless signs, and then he asks, tell me your story. And until I was there to hear people's story, I don't really think I had a heart for homelessness. I had a heart for giving. I had a heart for the problem, but I didn't have a heart for the people. But it was after I could learn, and they poured into me, that, you know, at one point our lives looked the same, and they, you know, it's the path diverted in the woods, and I ended up on one path and they ended up on the other. But I've learned so much from them about the path they went on. And so, you know, I love to hear you say that. But I know we're up against it and you're in Austin, so I will put in a pitch for those who are listening. We're doing this just as the Hurricane Harvey has just come through Houston. And so there's still going to be damage when you're hearing this. So I hope you have a heart for giving for those who are on there. I know that Mitscoot has got a giving campaign around helping those who are impacted by Hurricane Harvey. And so I hope people take the advantage to go to mitscoot.com, mitscoot.com, and that you're buying a product, you're helping the homeless, you're helping give back, and they've got a great Texas flag bandana right now that proceeds are going to help towards Hurricane Harvey and the damages. And everybody ought to have a Texas flag bandana. As a Texan, I could tell you it's really important. and you ought to have that in your life. But Tim, if people want to stay in contact with you and they want to follow you, where's the best outlet to be part of what your company is on and that journey that you're on?
Well, you can find us pretty much on any social media at Mitscoots. There aren't too many other companies with that name, so we own that space pretty well. But yeah, Instagram and Twitter, we're pretty active on both of those. Obviously, Facebook, lots of people are on that, probably more than they need to be throughout the day. But yeah.
So you've pretty much given up on MySpace.
You're not, no Friendster.
Darn.
Don't know how far that takes you back, but.
Yeah, it does.
Find us online. The dialogue is always kind of going on. Our website, obviously, mitscoots.com. And then even one word to the wise to get involved, and it doesn't necessarily have to just be with us, is that a lot of people ask, well, I want to help, but I'm not sure what to do. You know, a simple, quick thing that we always suggest doesn't require any purchase at all. It's just if you happen to have, you know, a Ziploc bag or a small container, throw in a nice new pair of socks, maybe a granola bar, bite to eat, some hygiene items, and just keep them in your car. And as you see individuals that you pass, if you think this is an opportunity to say hi and acknowledge somebody else instead of averting eye contact, you can just pass that out your window and start the dialogue. You know, it's not going to solve all the problems, but for that one person, I might let them know that I'm not invisible. You don't know how many lights they've sat through with people pretending that they're not there. It happens a lot. I've stood out there with them before. So, you know, even just that brief moment to identify someone's humanity can go a long way. So that's a great way to get involved if they like.
That's amazing advice. And we appreciate you. We appreciate everything Mitscoots Outfitters is doing to make the world a better place, a kinder place, and to really bring civic pride back to a civic discussion. So, Tim, we thank you for being here today. And we thank you all for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.